We have a lot of hymns and a lot of songs that we sing that declare that God is King, that Christ is King and Lord, that talk about the throne that our God sits upon, and we celebrate that, and we have faith in that, and that's where we take our hope. But all week I've been going, but really, what does it mean? What does it mean that Christ is a king? Because we don't really have kings, do we? We don't have any frame of reference to really understand what that phrase means, that Christ is king. We have politicians. Sure, we have loads of politicians. But is that really an equivalent that we can draw a parallel there to try and understand what it is that Christ is king when we look at our political system with its backroom dealings and the compromises that have to be made just to get anywhere in anything? That's all about trying to keep the people happy, trying to make sure that people will still vote for you the next time that you're up. I don't think that has any connection with what it means that Christ is the king. I mean, could you imagine if our God had to be elected every 4 years? My goodness, he'd have to try a lot harder. Because, frankly, you look at the world around you, how hard of a political campaign would that be to run for God, who says, I'm the one who's just, I'm the one who's holy, I am good all the time, I want the best for my people. Yeah, I know there are millions of people who are refugees. Yeah, I know that human trafficking's a thing that doesn't seem to be anything that I've done anything about. Yeah, I know that a huge percentage of the world population is living on like a dollar a day. Yeah, I know that there are children enslaved around the world, and people are dying, and there are hurricanes and tornadoes, and that there are volcanoes, and there are all these other things. But vote for me anyways. Would we vote for God? What do you think? I don't know if we would, to be honest. Because where's the evidence, right? Think about our current Canadian political climate. Already, Justin Trudeau, every single step of the way, before he even stepped into the office, he's been making all sorts of speeches, and there's been this media campaign to make sure that we, the people, know all the brilliant and marvelous things that he's doing, that we're aware that he's going to keep his promises and he's going to do this. Why? Because he has to look 4 years down the road and say, I want them to like me, I want them to trust me, I want them to vote for me again. And so everything about our political system is always going to be compromised a little bit because it has to be about keeping the people happy. And I'm not sure that's what it means when we talk about Christ the King. So I thought, we have Queen Elizabeth. We have kind of a queen. In fact, when I was I went up to Ottawa a few years back for July 1st weekend, and it was the year that William and Kate had been married, and so they were there and they were speaking, and you couldn't even see them. They were like little dots off in the horizon. But at one point, William said something in his speech, and I can't even remember what he was saying, but he referred to your queen, meaning our queen. And it struck me as odd, because I realized, I know technically that Queen Elizabeth is our queen, but it just felt weird to have her called our queen, because I don't think of her as our queen. I know she's the Queen of England, but really, what sway does she have there? I think about the queen, if I try and look at it that way and understand what it means that Christ is the king, is that mean he's like a figurehead? Somebody to put on the money of the kingdom of God so that we know, okay, it's under this guy, but you know, all the real work happens somewhere else? Because let's be honest, what influence does the Queen of England have in our day-to-day life? What influence does the Queen of England have even in the day-to-day life of the Brits, who also have a parliament who seems to be doing the actual on-the-ground work of the governing? Now, don't shoot me for those of you who have more awareness of the British parliamentary system than perhaps I do. The only point I'm trying to make is it's hard to find an equivalent to understand what it means that Christ is king. Because I don't think we can just look at Queen Elizabeth and say, well, you know, God's kind of her equivalent. Because there's something missing there. And then I had one of those aha moments where I thought, Elaine, stop trying to think of this in terms of politics and in terms even of government and running things, in terms of democracy. Think of it in terms of leadership. Well, I've spent a lot of years studying leadership, engaging in leadership development, working to try and develop other leaders, so I can think about that in a different way than I can think about government and about politics. So what is it about leaders that I think would parallel over to what it means that Christ is king? Well, leaders see the big picture. Whatever it is that you're trying to lead, you have to have the whole picture in focus. So as an example, Janet led Vacation Bible School this summer. So she had to have the whole thing, from the junior leaders to the senior leaders to the little kids in the preschool room to the bigger kids and the other parts, the snacks and the food and the decorations. She had to have a picture in her head of all of those pieces so that she could make things work so the whole program would come together. Now, somebody who was a leader of one of the sites at VBS didn't have to care about what all the other pieces are. So the people who were providing leadership in the kitchen, they didn't have to know what was going on in the music. They didn't have to know what was going on in the drama section or in the craft area. They had to know the picture of the kitchen. But if Janet didn't know the picture of all the pieces, then VBS would just be a whole bunch of little bits and pieces with no connection, no coherence between it all. Likewise, if you have somebody overseeing the kitchen who isn't aware of all the pieces, like the fact that they need to order the food and the fact that kids are going to come in and help prepare it, and what are the health requirements so that we can prepare it without getting kids sick, and who are the helpers who are going to be there, and what time is the snack served? They have to know all of those pieces so that they can lead the kitchen. So a leader has to know the big picture of whatever it is they're leading. Our government leaders, they have to know the big picture of Canada. Us in Ontario, we just have to know Ontario. And let's be honest, most of us, individual citizens in a country, tend towards selfishness. We see our piece of the world, and we're generally pretty ignorant about what's happening, say, on the East Coast or on the West Coast, we who live in the center, really, of the world, we think, but, you know, the center of our country. Although I think there are those in, say, Manitoba who would argue that we're not really the center, we're kind of the east. But the people who are leading our country have to have an awareness of the big picture. Good leadership doesn't have a narrow focus. It sees the whole picture and how all of the pieces fit. It's like seeing the picture on a puzzle that you're trying to put together and make work together. If a leader only sees one piece of it, then you end up with disaster and things falling apart. Good leaders see the whole picture of whatever it is that they are trying to lead. Good leaders understand that they're not in leadership for their own glory and their own greatness, and so everybody will look at them and go, wow, you're extraordinary, aren't you amazing? Janet hated that I drew attention to her just a few minutes ago as our VBS leader, because she doesn't lead VBS so that you'll all go, way to go, Janet, that was fantastic. You should do that, because it was fantastic. But regardless, she does it because she loves the kids, and she loves the ministry, and she loves Jesus Christ and wants the kids to get to know Jesus. That's why Carolyn leads our Godly Play program. That's why Floyd leads our Board of Managers. Not because he loves buildings and money, although maybe he does, but because he loves the church and he wants to see how we as a church can be effective. They aren't doing these leadership roles because they all want to be honored and glorified and upheld. They're doing it because they want to serve, because it's a way that they can serve this church and serve God and serve even our community. Good leaders see the whole big picture of things, and they go at it with an attitude of service. The best political leaders are in their office to serve the Canadian people, not to serve themselves or their own interests. They're there to serve the Canadian people. You're the judge of whether or not any of them ever do that. Good leaders are like good parents. See, serving the people doesn't mean just doing whatever the people want. Imagine if that's how things were in your household with your kids. If you just did whatever your kids want, because I'm supposed to serve them. Some of you probably feel like that. Some of you probably feel, especially if you've got really little ones, like you're just servants at their beck and call. They cry out for food, you have to give it to them. They need a hug, you have to give it to them. You have to be there 24/7 for whatever and everything that they need. But that's the thing, right? It's about what they need. It's not just about what they want. As soon as your kid gets their driver's license and they're declaring, Mommy, you have to buy me a car, or Daddy, you have to get me this, or you have to do this or that or whatever, you as a parent are saying, because you see the whole picture of the kind of adult you were trying to create and of the kind of values you were trying to instill, you see a big picture. Your kids only see their narrow focus. You were there to serve them, but to serve them so that they grow up into the kind of adults that you are hoping that they will become. Not there to serve them to simply cater to their every whim and every desire, as much as any of us when we were kids would have liked that of our parents. It's the same with any leader. They're there to serve the people, to serve the interests of the people, but they have a perspective that each of us individually doesn't have. They have the perspective of the whole big picture. Every kid who shows up to Vacation Bible School wants it to be all about them, because kids are notoriously narcissistic. That means it's all about them. Every kid wants to be able to stand on stage and have the whole world fawn over them. Every kid comes to VBS and they want to be the center of attention. Every kid can't be, because there's too many of them. And so we have leaders who see the whole picture, who know what the kids need, which is they do need to be acknowledged and recognized. They do need to be shown that they have dignity and worth and that they're loved and valued. But how that happens, how those needs are served by the leaders, takes into account the big, broad picture of things. Good leaders are not dictators. They don't just stand at the top and say, okay, all of you, do what I want because I'm in charge and you're my peons who have to do it. Too long, I struggled with the idea that God was king and God was sovereign, because it sounded to me like God was the great chess master and we were the peons on the board. Some of us might have been bishops or knights or whatever, but most of us were just the peons who could be thrust around here, there, and everywhere on the board to be used to the king's or the master's desire. And you know what? If we had to be sacrificed, we had to be sacrificed. That's what sovereignty felt like to me. It was like we were saying, God's in charge, God can do whatever he wants, so what about us? Well, good leaders aren't dictators, because they care about the people that they are serving. It's not about them. Dictators are always all about them. They're always all about saying, it's my way because I'm the greatest and I know the most and I want you all to love and adore and honor me, but do it my way. They're about power. They're about holding it on. Loving people, caring about people, means you trust them to have dignity and worth. And that means you have an open style of leadership, which allows other people to have their voices heard. It means that that in the caring about people, people grow. As you entrust them with their own spheres of influence and leadership, they grow. As you pour into them, as you provide opportunities for them to join with you in that leadership, they grow. Again, to use VBS as an example, we have all these junior leaders running around. Some of them, from a purely objective leadership perspective, are completely useless as leaders. Let's be honest. Janet's not going to say who, and I'm not going to say who, but some of them are, because they're like 12 and they don't know the first thing about leading. They've never been given any responsibility. But the beautiful thing is, we put them in a position of leadership with the right resources around them, and when they come back next year, they won't be as useless. And when they come back the year after, they'll be even less useless. And then by the time they actually graduate and they come back as our summer student or something, they're phenomenal. Because leadership isn't just about taking from people, it's about pouring into people because you love them. You see how the big picture is. You care for the people. You serve them in hopes and in expectation that they will grow and they will develop and they will become all the things that God has in them to become. This is what leadership is. This is what it means that Christ is King. This is our God who sees the big picture. The big picture of all of creation from beginning to end. We call God the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning of the end. He's got it all in his sights or in his head. He's got the whole picture there that he can see. I mean, how often do we find ourselves in prayer blaming God or yelling at God because we think that we see the whole picture? Faith is about stepping back, and faith that God is King is about stepping back and saying, I trust that there are things that I don't understand. I trust that there's a picture here. There's a huge, big picture here. And I'm one piece in this giant puzzle. Or I'm a piece of this giant puzzle. And God, I'm going to trust that in your goodness, in your sovereignty, in your awareness of this great big puzzle, that somehow I fit. And somehow these things that don't make sense to me also somehow have a place in what you see, but that you have that big picture. God is not a dictator. God is not standing up there in front of his giant throne saying, "Oh, people that I have created, won't you please bow down and worship me? Because I need your adoration and your praise." That's not the God that we worship. The God that we worship is worthy of our adoration and praise. But he doesn't sit up there lording it over us, saying, "I'm so much better than all the rest of you." He is better than the rest of us. He's not tainted by sin. He's our creator. But he has always, always loved us so deeply that he's always sought to serve us. Look what he did in Jesus. He sent his only son to live among us, to set us straight because we were so straying off the path. And he allowed his son to die so that we could live. That's a God. That's a leader, a king who serves, who isn't there to be served, but who serves. And because he loves us so much, because he seeks our best, because we trust that he's got the whole picture and he knows things that we don't know and he understands things that we don't understand, we turn ourselves over and we choose to become his servants. We choose to do as he says. We choose to follow his ways, not because he demands it of us, but because he's worthy of all of those choices. And because we believe that he is good and holy and just, that he doesn't compromise, that he doesn't engage in backroom deals, that he's not just about making the loudest voices happy, but that he genuinely knows what's best for us and for the creation as a whole. Our God desires to see us grow and develop the same way as good leaders want to see the people they're leading grow and develop and become more and more what God has intended for them. God himself wants to see us grow and develop. He puts us in situations where we feel like we are completely ill-equipped, where we get thrown into the midst of it and we go, "I'm not prepared to do this. I don't have any skills to draw upon." He does that so that we can depend upon him and so that he can do work in us to make us more what he wants for us. I remember coming to this church, like it's been 17 years, and I remember coming to this church and watching our Sunday school program and watching Jim Carroll was teaching junior high Sunday school. God love you for teaching junior highs. And Cindy Rapley was his helper. And Cindy Rapley was vehement. She would also hate that I'm mentioning her, so don't tell her. She was vehement that all she was ever going to do was be a helper. Within a decade, Cindy was teaching VBS kids the Bible story. And she came in costumes and had decorations and props. She was the most astoundingly gifted teacher that you could imagine. And it was because God loved her. And because God's way of leading is a way of service and development. And he grew her in ways that she could shine and she could thrive. So many people in this congregation, one of the great joys of having been here as long as I have, I've seen this in so many people in this congregation. The way people grow and develop and thrive and become something that 17 years ago they never would have thought that they could become. Because that's the kind of king our God is. That he loves us. He loves us en masse, but he loves us individually so that he wants you to become something more than you are. Because he had a dream when he made you. When he knit you together, the psalmist says, he knit you together in your mother's womb, and he had this dream of who you would be, and he's all about trying to make you that. That's how our God leads. And it all glorifies and grows his kingdom. It all comes in the shape of this giant big picture that our God has of the world. And we might go, "What is my place in this? You know, you might be a mom who's spending your days 24/7 catering to a toddler and going, what place do I have in that kingdom? What is God doing in me? How is this anything spectacular or amazing? God sees a big picture, and he put you in the place that you are on purpose, not because you're a pawn that he's just moving around on a chessboard, but because he loves you and he's doing something in you to make you more and more and more the person that he intended when he knit you together in the very beginning. This is the kind of king Christ is. He sees the big picture. He loves us. He wants the best. He knows what's best. And what does it mean that Christ is the king? Because there may have been other kings, there may be other political leaders who you say, well, they have all these things. But here's the thing. Christ alone is the only one who is not infected by sin, who's not infected by those selfish, narcissistic desires that are deep in us that we try and put aside, but that shape us and move us and motivate so much of what we do. Christ is good and kind and holy and perfect. He is just. And whatever the world around us looks like, the king who we claim to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the king of God's kingdom who is set in place to rule and oversee things, the king who is even now bringing his kingdom into reality, even though sometimes we doubt that and we don't see it, that's because we don't see the big picture that God sees. That king is worthy of our honor and our praise. That king who sacrificed himself for us, who took that whole big picture and said, there's a big problem with this picture, and that problem's name is sin, and the only one who can do something about it is me, and I will give everything to do something about it so that those puzzle pieces can come back together again and my creation can be what it was when I first made it and what I intended when I first dreamed up this glorious world. That's our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Not one who lords it over us or who demands obedience at every step of the way, but one who loves us, who serves us, who wants our growth and our beauty and our development, who's turning our world into something beautiful regardless of what it looks like in our limited scope and our limited vision. It's Christ the King Sunday. And even though next week we turn to a baby in a manger, let us never, ever forget that that baby in a manger is the king of all things and all people, and that that battle has already been won. There are no more votes to cast. There are no more elections to be run. Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Let's pray.